Welcome to Just an Average Citizen, the podcast that helps to educate, inform, and empower you to make an impact in Abilene and the Big Country. Thank you so much for joining me for this Book by the Bite episode. You know that Wednesdays are the day that I drop an episode about books and we try to give little bites of them. And I apologize because I have failed miserably in just giving bites. I had these grandiose plans that it was going to be something I could take care of in 45 minutes and let you see the highlights. And I do think there are a lot of books that are that way. I just happen to be in the thick of some books that really are kind of mind-blowing to the average person because they really haven't understood or been made aware of what's really going on. And I think these books are powerful and worth looking into. So this looks like it'll be a two-episoder. This is going to be probably a little bit long because I'm pushing it into two episodes because I hope I can get all that I need in and get you to see how important it is so that you will stick around to the end to catch all of it. And I just want to let you know that this episode is sponsored by Republic Fence, and I personally recommend calling the guys at Republic Fence to build a fence for your home or business. They specialize in residential-style privacy fencing that will enhance the beauty and security of your home. I want to say Cole and Judah are great, great people. They're conservative Christian guys, and they will do a great job for you at an honest price. You can contact them at republicfencetexas.com. So, as always, I think I have tried to earn your trust and respect over the information I present as being factual and something that you can know is a solid source. And so it would really help me if you subscribe and share this with your family and friends, because we are in a day and age where there's a lot of stuff going on that if you're not aware, you're not going to see it. And that's why it's really hard. I know that I get into the weeds of things a lot quicker and I'm more fascinated by it. So I feel like I'm like, hey, look what I found. And I want you to know so that you can be educated and informed, because a lot of times when you don't know what's going on and people bring some contrary positions to things, then it's easy for you to be like, well, I guess she was wrong. I guess Tammy didn't know what she was talking about. Or I guess my friend was wrong, or I guess the Bible is wrong, or you name it. But when we understand what is going on in our culture, then we can wage this war better. And it is a war. It is a battle. We know who wins the war, but we're fighting battles daily and very much so here in the Big Country. So I just want you to understand this is not something that there's many sources I know that talk about what's going on in this capacity, but especially if you're part of the kingdom or the church, then you know that this is something we're called to do and we're called to engage and stand up for truth. And it's hard when you don't understand all the moving parts. So I hope that you will see the importance of what we're talking about so that you can engage better, even in how you receive information. And I found one thing that happens is that the biggest places of influence are not on social media. They're not from the rooftops. They're actually in our day-to-day relationships in the places God has already placed us. So don't feel like you have to stand up and be this person who does a podcast or you make, big posts on social media. Honestly, if you just have a conversation with your friend the next time you're around them, or be willing to talk to your coworkers, or just people that are in the places God has already put you, and you will make a bigger impact there than you ever will by just trying to do it in a public place. So I want to follow up, or I just want to give you some context. We are following up in the same line. The first podcast I did for Book by the Bite was Lost in Translation, and I really thought I had a good understanding of what we were talking about. There was an event in our city that really exposed to me some of what is going on this topic with gender identity and gender dysphoria, rapid onset gender dysphoria, all that stuff. And so I really thought I had a good understanding. And I want to say I was on the right track. I just didn't have enough depth. And so what I want to talk to you today is this book called The Queering of the American Child. And this is a book called How New School Religious Cult Poisons the Minds and Bodies of Our Normal Kids. It's by Logan Lansing with James Lindsay. And you may have heard of James Lindsay. I used his book, Cynical Theories, to help you understand queer theory and why it is taking over so much of our culture. And I was even reminded the other day that, you know, I forget in the alphabet of letters that go with a certain community, the LGBTQIA+, I think if you want to throw 2SA, you know, we've got so many letters on there. I keep forgetting that the Q doesn't mean queer. It means questioning. And why that matters is because queer is all of them. All of them are inclusive of queer. All of them defy what we've experienced as traditional, normal, God-oriented ways, and they are part of expanding how we receive and input cultural information. And this is a filter that many of us have put on and we're unaware of it because we've been told it's inclusive. We need to be inclusive. We need to be, you know, we need to have diversity. We need to be equitable to people in all different in all different manners. And, you know, I'm of the demographic that has the most to prove in this train of thought because of the color of my skin and the fact that I choose to live a life that God has ordained to be the best life possible, being married, having children. And again, being married isn't the only way to do it, but I'm just saying having a family and living within confines of marriage is definitely something that is countercultural because of what has been going on in this culture war. So it's going to be a long episode and I'm already kind of deep into it. So let's go ahead and get started. This introduction, I really literally just wanted to read it out loud because it is so powerful. So I'm going to try and just hit the highlights and you're going to laugh and say, Tammy, it's all highlighted. But I hope I bring honor to these authors and you go out and buy this book because it's that big of a deal. Like if there's a book I could say right now is so relevant and could help you understand so many things that are going on right now, not just with our children, but even in your workplace, in our culture, in what is going on, you will find it in this book. So I can't encourage you enough. And I'm sure my husband is going to be great and put a link so that you can find it on Amazon to purchase it if you want to. I am doing a great service to these authors. I've got a hard copy and a Kindle version. So hopefully that is, and there's no Audible or I would have probably bought that. But anyway, so let's talk with this one. Queer theory is based on the mystical religious teachings of Michel Foucault, Judith Butler, Eve Kosofsky, Kosofsky Sedgwick, Deborah P. Britzman, and many others. These queer theorists created queer theory gospels that cultists worldwide now draw upon to push children to destabilize tradition, eliminate social norms, and poison their minds and bodies. Queer theory is the revealed knowledge that motivates thousands of kids to wield political activism against society and themselves. Children influenced by queer theory adopt new gender identities, fantasize about social transitioning, perform drag, and experiment with fictional sexualities and related behaviors. Now, a little side note here, it's interesting here that they, children influenced by queer theory adopt these things and perform drag. I have been a big proponent for SB 12 and, you know, SB 12 is a bill that it requires adults not to perform sexually in front of, do sexual acts or anything, which is an excessive interest, but, you know, to keep children protected from being exposed to that kind of stuff. And there's not one word is, drag mentioned in this bill. And what's going to be interesting is this SB 12, which is a great protective bill for our children, is probably going to be thrown out because the plaintiffs, including a person from our own city of Abilene, Texas, have said that it's a drag ban and it's about drag shows. And it's crazy to me how we can have laws that have nothing of that nature written in them explicitly, but because people who say they're not wanting to be around children, as we know, performing drag is a thing. Drag, we'll talk about a drag queen story hour. It is a thing. It is about exposing kids to queer theory. And drag is what we're most offended by in some ways. Some of us who see the troubling problems that come with this kind of lifestyle, but it's not the worst and most toxic part of this whole experience. It is the queer theory that is used to be presented in. It is, we're going to talk about this, the Mott and the Bailey. The Mott is the position that is defensible, and I don't know, the Mott is the indefensible position, like, you know, it's just drag queen story hour. The Bailey is the position of, we really are trying to get our kids queered. We want them to be queered, and you don't have to fit in one of those alphabet letters to be queer. You can be queer and be a very much an ally of all those different letters. But the Bailey is what they want to protect, which is queer theory. And so we're all fighting about drag shows. Drag shows is the fruit of this. It is something that if we're not careful, we're going to take out the fruit and not really get to the root of it. So anyway, there's so much I can talk about because of the extensive amount of research I've done in the last year. I hope you understand when I speak stuff, there is weight to what I'm saying. It is not just my personal opinion. It is not something I've just thought, hey, this sounds like a good idea. It is the research that I've done, and I want you to be empowered to start understanding this concept so that you can start recognizing where it is throughout your day and throughout our community even here. This group doesn't believe in all aspects of cult doctrine, but they know they can use the cult strategy. Okay, so the inner circle. So this is the core of who's trying to get queer theory to become normal, which is ironic because they want to destroy all things normal. So anyway, the inner cult doesn't believe in all aspects of the cult doctrine, but they know they can use the cult strategically to achieve their ultimate goal, power. The inner circle wields the cult's tremendous monetary and cultural power to finance and influence cult activism expansion. And I honestly don't believe we have a lot of this inner circle in our Abilene community. I don't think many people truly understand what they're doing. I think we'll talk about what part I do think that most people are in who live in this area. Surrounding the inner circle of the cult are groups of awakened scholars and activists who form the cult's inner school. The inner school is home to activists, academics, organizations, subject matter experts, teachers, consultants, and policymakers who have undergone cult initiation and are familiar with the cult's teaching and practices. They are the cult's true believers in most cases, in some others, opportunistic players who know the cult's doctrine thoroughly and use it to advance their own social, political, and material interest. Those in queer theory's inner school are called queer activists. Okay, so most people I don't think would consider themselves queer activists, especially in our area. Queer activists in the inner school do the work of meeting the inner circle's demand. Okay, so I'm sorry, let me take that back. The inner circle, I don't think we have that. There are some queer activists, but I still don't think that's the majority of people in Abilene. Okay, so they do the work of meeting the inner circle's demands. Queer activists are wholly committed to the cult and have mostly severed ties with anyone who doesn't share their faith. Do you know anybody in your world that if you try and stand up against what is not right about children transitioning or what the definition of a woman is, do you notice that those people can cut you off and they won't have anything to do with you? I do. I have lots of people who have done that because I used to think it was because of something I've done. No, this is what they're trained to do. If you don't agree with them, then you're not a part of the cult and they're going to cut you off. The inner school's cult attachment is both intellectual, emotional, and its members are fiercely loyal to the teaching and prescriptions of the cult doctrine, queer theory, which is with which they are considerably familiar. The inner school queer activists defend the cult at all cost, which is why we have a local university who present a week about sexuality. And these people in these queer activists, they are very much queer activists. They're saying they don't have a right to exist because someone taught a message that is contradictory to the lifestyle they've chosen to live. They can't exist. It's not that people don't agree with them. It's that you've snuffed out their ability to exist and as a student at this particular local university. The largest layer of the cult is home to initiates, the outer circle. And I think this is where most people who would identify with wanting to protect this group of people, they're queer, they're the outer school. The people in the outer school are drawn to the cult because it offers them enlightenment and a path to salvation. Their ties to the cult are overwhelmingly social and emotional. In fact, these cult initiates are mostly unaware of the cult's deeper doctrine and goals. 100% believe that right now we're in a battle where most people are unaware of the cult's deeper doctrine and goals, and in many cases, know little of the doctrine except at the surface level. Hello, inclusion sounds like a great idea. We want to be inclusive until you understand what that actually means. It's inclusive of anyone who agrees with you. It's exclusive if you don't agree with the cult doctrine. In most cases, cult initiates have never read any of the cult's gospels. I guarantee not one person who I've spoken with who has tried to say what I'm doing, what we're standing up for is wrong, have ever really truly understood what we were talking about, because it's just on the surface feels bigoted to them. On the other hand, their friends are in the cult and they think what it means to be a good, they think it's what it means to be a good person. So here's where we've taken away what life is about. The Bible says that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And the only way we can be redeemed is through accepting the sacrifice Jesus made on the cross to satisfy the payment for our sins. And we are sinful people. We are sinners, every one of us. And here the cult says to be a good person is to be a part of the cult. So which one sounds a lot easier? Easier to be a part of a group or easier to humble yourself and say, I can't do this on my own. I have to trust that God has a plan and a purpose and he has sacrificed everything for me. I mean, you know, deny yourself, take up your cross. That is not a fun, it's not a fun thing, but to be a part of the cult, to be a part of the group, it sounds amazing. To be included, it sounds amazing. Their initiated friends create a social circle that defines inclusion in terms of accepting and promoting the cult's doctrine. The outer school is home to those who have been deceived by the cult's manipulation, propaganda, and activism. The initiates of the outer school are the cult's primary victims and serve as cash cows, foot soldiers, sacrifices, and depending on the person, potential inner school converts. So there is a local university that had a bunch of people create a Facebook group in order to protect those who say they're not allowed to exist at this university. They are the foot soldiers, and they will probably become the inner school converts because of how much they're included and praised for what they're doing. But they're really being used. Most of them don't recognize how badly they're being used. Let me say that. The people pushing it are not being used. The people who agree and support them are being used. Queer activists welcome recruits in a safe and inclusive environment where they feel like the most important people in the world and in which they are protected from ideas that might challenge cult doctrine, something experts in cult psychology call milieu control. The cult preys on the confused, vulnerable, and disenfranchised with a siren's call of total affirmation. Initiates in the outer school feel euphoric when they find the cult, a feeling that is typical of stepping into any cult, at least initially. Queer activists offer them solutions to resolve all their confusion, alienation, loneliness, and pain in an affirming social environment and something to do that feels meaningful and productive. Love bombing is part of the positive part of the cyclical process of abuse during cult initiation. The negative part of the cycle involves deliberately inducing trauma. Listen to this. They deliberately induce trauma to create conditions of vulnerability, embarrassment, and even humiliation. Taken together, this cycle of abuse is called trauma bonding, and queer activists skillfully deploy it as a mechanism to initiate control and control cult members. Trauma bonding involves exposing children to age-inappropriate content related to sex, gender, and sexuality, causing deep psychological disturbances. These disturbances generate emotions that are difficult to cope with, especially for innocent children. And we'll talk about what they think about the innocence of children later, but it truly is shocking to me, and I hope it's as shocking to you too, is how perverse this group is. Who aren't yet equipped to deal with such topics, especially on fraudulent terms. Once disturbed, children search for affirmation, healing, kindness, and love. They find their relief in the very hands that have just abused them. Cults have long used this tactic to foster a growing state of social and emotional dependency among their targets. So, this cycle of abuse solidifies the hierarchical control with queer activists exerting authority over the cult initiates. This makes it ripe for conducting initiations and rites, often discreetly executed in after-school clubs tailored for this very indoctrination. I know we heard of a teacher, and I can't even remember who it was, but a third grade teacher who allowed second graders through fifth or sixth graders to come into a club where they got to play fun games that nowhere else could you play these games. And it was about, you know, exposing them to be choosing their sexuality. We know this. We see evidence of this time and time again. And if you haven't, reach out to me. We'll talk about it because if you haven't seen it, it is prevalent and very pervasive throughout our schools. Now, I don't know. I can't really speak to that specifically here in Abilene because I do not think that most of the teachers are involved in promoting this. I think they're just innocent bystanders who have been told what they need to do, and they're doing it because they care about kids, but they don't understand actually what they're doing. And I'm hoping to some degree that this will expose that so that you will see it's not innocent and it's not helpful. It's actually destructive and harming our children. Children don't want to rat out their abusers when those very abusers make them feel included and loved for who they are. Because, I mean, who wants a parent who might withhold something a kid wants when they can be a part of a group that lets them do whatever they want and tells them they are who they're perfect the way they are. There's no need for change. As initiates become more deeply involved, the secrecy surrounding these practices grow, creating a barrier against external scrutiny and criticism. All right, so the emotional roller coaster of trauma bonding also reinforces loyalty as initiates craving relief and acceptance become more tightly bound to the cult's ideology and community. The euphoria that a new initiates experience upon joining the cult is a typical yet misleading allure of such abusive systems, disguising the deeper, more insidious layers of manipulation and control at play. By inducing and resolving personal identity crises in children through the, they deliberately knowingly engage in this process by inducing and resolving personal identity crises in the children through the process of queer education. And that has nothing to do with actual education. This is what is being infiltrated into our educational systems that you'll find out later, that it is throughout our educational systems. And I would love if somebody would talk to me about this, but pretty much anytime I reach out to anybody or try to talk about it, they say, oh, that's not happening. You're crazy. You don't know what you're talking about. So there's no place for conversations when I know there's stuff going on because of what I've seen happen at school board meetings. And I know this is part of how they're doing it. So it's not, this is not something that's not touched. It has touched our community for sure. Queer activists offer social activism, which faces outward through much of the inward, though much of it is inward facing on the work of personal transformation. All right. People who identify as avatar, the inner work transforms its victim into queer cultists, people who identify as avatars of the cult doctrine. Strict social expectations with powerful social and emotional rewards, affirmation, celebration, belonging, and punishments, criticizing, problematizing, struggle are both tied to the inner and outer cult work. When the cult can't find vulnerable people to bolster recruitment, it creates them. The cult is very good at convincing ordinary people that society has mistreated and abandoned them, or will if they confess any of their personal secrets, questions, or doubt. There are people convince people by relentlessly attacking them through mostly invisible forces hidden in language and the common sense of day to day. So it's not overt. They don't say this is what we're doing, because that's what cults do. They hide what they're actually doing so they can get more people involved. The queer activists use abusive techniques. The messaging relentlessly externalizes the shame and alienation it creates in its victims by pointing at the oppressive society and blaming normal people and normalcy itself for causing these feelings. The cults become increasingly hermeneutically sealed social environment for initiates, isolating them more and more from outsiders and outside influences. And the fear of rejection and social isolation keeps people locked into a cult and a cycle of abuse. Okay, so they become so emotionally groomed that they cannot live without the cult. Activists threaten a loss of salvation. Remember that we talked about the loss of salvation anytime they say they want to step out of line, or anytime they step out of line. Queer theory is not merely academic. It is full of religious rituals and observances. They dress in religious garb of the drag queen or king, or through highly identifiable patterns of dress, grooming, and presentation. They are constantly in revolution. Queer theory demands total submission and obedience. Queer activists isolate, punish, and exclude anyone who contradicts cult doctrine, ritual, or practice. And so, I have less access to stuff that's going on in the community because I have taken a stand, and they, some of the groups have blocked me so that there's no way I can see what they're doing. But you can't block everybody in the entire city because there's always ways around that and ways to check up on stuff. But honestly, I'm not looking to point all this stuff out. I just find it. And when I see it, I can't unsee it, and I can't stop talking about it. And thankfully, the last safe place that the drag queens have in our city has closed. And at least that option is not necessarily a viable path for many people in our city because our community doesn't support it. They're not for this group. As much as the group claims that they are welcomed by everyone in the city, they're not, because we see what it is. And it's helpful when the community becomes aware of the power of their voices to stop this. And then maybe officials will stop catering to them, those minority voices. And I'm not speaking of skin color. I'm saying the group that is in the minority, they'll stop catering to them because they recognize there's so much more strength in the community as a whole that stands against it. And that's part of why we have to stand and speak out, so that our elected officials know that there are more of us than there are of them. Because right now, those voices are so loud, they can't hear anything else and they don't know of anything else. And so we fail to let them know that we stand and support them for doing the right thing. And we're working on that. So there's hope there. Okay. Queer theory demands total submission and obedience. Queer activists isolate, punish, and exclude anyone who contradicts the doctrine, ritual, or practice. Family and friends are no exception. If they have a problem with the cult has a problem with them. The cult psychologically conditions cult members to abandon their loved ones who don't affirm and celebrate an initiate's spiritual awakening. This dynamic guarantees alienation and isolation together with a belief that only the cult can provide the initiate with friends or comrades, acceptance and sense of social identity and belonging, and a safe refuge from rejection and loneliness. Cognitive dissonance, which I hope a lot of you who are watching this are experiencing this because you're like, this can't be true. And I'm just saying, yes, it is true. But cognitive dissonance is the cult's go-to method for isolating cult members and potential initiates from their friends and families. And, you know, I'm standing up for some really controversial stuff in our city right now. And most people are like, nah, I don't see it. I don't see it. I don't get it. I mean, I understand what you're saying is wrong, but I don't see what you're seeing. And I just hope by you sticking around through at least the introduction that you'll see that this is it is an issue in our city. And it's not about it saying it because they're not going to say it. You have to see and know their language to understand what they're saying. All right. So what cognitive dissonance is when somebody holds two incompatible beliefs. It's the crisis you enter when your incompatible beliefs cause emotional turmoil because you're saying, I don't want my kids to be indoctrinated, but I don't want to be rejected from society. And that is cognitive dissonance. You can't choose to be accepted and protect your kids these days. You're going to have to do one or the other. And I'm praying that more people recognize that the only option is to protect our children and their innocence, because that defies what queer theory is all about. I mean, even protecting the innocence of children is in their terms, non-existent. Okay. The target is easily, psychological abuse. See, they have to rely on the abuser to make sense of the world, so they can't figure out what's going on without their not seeking knowledge of the abuser. The cult of queer theory is extremely narcissistic. Cult members are excessively interested in themselves, their appearances, and their religious practices. They want control. They generate anxiety and discomfort in a child. Queer activists tell kids that although they love their parents can understand revelation because they're too old. Their parents can't understand revelation. They're too old, too stupid, and too brainwashed by evil spirits that control society. Their parents are part of the evil systems of control. They tell children their parents won't accept their new identity, their new cult identity. They are known for taking pains to redefine the word family for initiates as those who accept them for their acceptance of cult doctrine. Okay, so my family is not the ones God has given me. My family is those who accept my new identity. Have you heard any books about that lately? If you haven't, let's talk, because it's about accepting our identity. Those who accept our identity replaces our family. Read. So you have to accept the cult doctrine, who they really are authentically, as opposed to the people who would try to protect them from the cult's influence, including flesh and blood family members, especially parents. Children targeted by the cult love their parents, but they also love the promise of salvation offered to them. Therefore, they must choose between the parents and the cult. And by doing these things secretly, because they don't want them to tell their parents about it, children aren't upsetting or alerting their parents. So they're doing it in secret, so the parents don't have any idea what's going on until all of a sudden they've lost their child. The new cult, they enjoy their new cult friends and all the love bombing of those friends. The children are told the only way to resolve their anxiety is through queer theory. The cult tells kids that truly loving parents would want them to be happy, even if being happy means keeping secrets. So the cult tells the parents the only way to prove that they love their children is to accept, affirm, and celebrate their child's transition into the new cult identity. Parents don't want to join the cult. They don't want their child to join the cult, but they don't also want their child to commit suicide, which that's what they're told will happen if they don't allow this, which is a lie. It's a lie. There's statistics that data shows that children do not change their tendencies for suicide because they aren't or are allowed to or are not allowed to transition. The cult of queer theory has, or queer activists have waged war on our language. Okay, so again, we can be using the same words but have totally new meanings. And if you're unaware of these new meanings, then you can be agreeing with the queer cult and not even recognize that you're a part of promoting what they're doing. So, for example, the average person that gender and have largely succeeded in convincing the average person that gender and gender identity are real things. Astonishingly, queer activists, this is important. The terms gender as used by the cult and gender identity were invented by the cult. So the cult has now gotten most of you to talk about gender and gender identity, and you might say biological man or biological woman, and you don't even realize you're spouting the theories of the cult. There's male and female. We don't need a biological one because there's no such thing as a non-biological male, right? So it's a redundancy. It's like saying a pretty beautiful sky. You know, that's two of the same words. Not the exact same, but you understand what I'm saying. Astonishingly, queer activists have even convinced large swaths of the population that sex isn't real, that men and women are political categories. Queer activists have lied, cheated, and bullied their way into all the places religious cults shouldn't be. The American Psychological Association, the APA, not only publishes cult doctrine, it practices cult magic. So we can't even trust the American Psychological Association anymore, nor can we trust the American, the Pediatric Association of America? I can't remember what that one is. I mean, everything has been indoctrinated by this cult doctrine. And that's Lost in Translation addresses that more specifically. As for the practice of cult magic, the APA pushes the gender affirmative approach, which is the cult's way of forcing both individuals and society to accept queer theory. Because again, when is it affirmative to mutilate children? That's not what we typically call affirmative care. That's called destructive care, in the easiest way, I guess. All right, so here is the letter that they wrote to Congress. 62 other organizations joined them in submitting. This is a letter to Congress. Healthcare to treat gender dysphoria is medically necessary. Gender dysphoria is recognized as a serious medical condition by every major U.S. medical association and the World Health Organization. Remember, gender dysphoria is not what they're talking. Rapid onset gender dysphoria. Gender dysphoria affects very few, mostly males in their preschool years and carries with it. It starts in the preschool years. Gender dysphoria has now been also, what is it called? It's been taken over by, instead of being rapid onset gender dysphoria. That's a whole different ballgame, and it affects mostly teenage girls. Okay, so anyway, they're saying that it's recognized as a serious medical condition. Every major medical and mental health association in the U.S., representing more than 1.3 million U.S. doctors, supports individualized, age-appropriate gender-affirming care that promotes the health and well-being of transgender people. And we know through Dr. Grossman's book, Lost in Translation, that they do not do anything to help the child but transition. The only goal of all of these organizations is to transition the child. They offer no counseling, no mental health workups, nothing to help the child except their goal is to transition them. So be forewarned, there's no way to entertain this conversation with a medical professional where their goal is not to destroy the child by sterilizing them and possibly mutilating their body through surgery. All right. Let's see here. So they have urged Congress to oppose any legislation that would prevent the practice of psychosocial, chemical, and surgical intervention on any child. There's no age limit that identifies as anything other than sex that they are. So affirmation is the cult's magical process, which is obvious when you realize that the standard practice in medicine is to treat and hopefully cure pathological states, not affirm and further them. So used to, we want to cure kids of these pathological states, not affirm them in that destructive path. It makes you look progressive. However, when you practice the magic, it makes you look progressive instead of bigoted. If we don't understand the why, then we can't understand how to reject the magic, protect our children from the cult, and start rebuilding our normal lives. That's the best thing you can do, is normalize your world, because that is what flies in the face of everything queer theory, queer activists, the queer cult holds near and dear to their heart. Normalcy is their kryptonite. Okay, so this gentleman who has written this book has worked countless hours, read the materials to decipher the cult's coded language. And I do mean coded. That's how the cultists describe it. So they speak purposely in coded language so that you cannot understand what is going on. So this is the first part. I think we're going to start do part one today, and then we'll move on to part two next week. Part one is queer theory. So this is the nuts and bolts of what we're talking about. And again, I would have read the entire introduction to you because it's that powerful. And if you do nothing else, buy the book and read the introduction, you will be so much wiser. And your children and your grandchildren will be in such a better place because you are aware of the tactics going on. Queering Education, the Windsor School. So the Windsor School is an elite all-girls preparatory school in Boston, Massachusetts. Parents pay $56,000 a year to go to this school. In 2021, the school released a 106-page document that outlined the renewed commitment to diversity, equity, inclusion. Okay, so the goal was to seek a deeper understanding of the totality of our DEI practices and to provide a roadmap for the work ahead. Their commitment to DEI meant that the adults in the room were no longer committed to protecting and educating children, because you cannot do both. You cannot protect and educate girls and promote DEI. And it's going to tell us a little bit why. So the DE focused professional development opportunities for faculty and staff. They had a section called Answering the Call of Social Justice. Implicit bias, sexual diversity. Again, social justice has also been, I think we're going to talk about in this book, has been, what is that word? I can't think of the word where it's been taken over. They've claimed it instead of what it used to mean. Justice is no longer what we think it is. Unless we ask for a clarifying definition, we will not know if we're talking about the same thing. Okay, but I do want you to recognize DEI includes sexual diversity now. It's not just about skin color. It's about diversity in your sexual identity. And why that's being promoted at a children's school. Children don't have sexual identities. If they're not a part of the queer cult, they don't have sexual identities. In the 2021 U.S. Department of Education, the document supporting transgender youth in school reaffirmed discrimination based on sex. So look at that. The U.S. Department of Education is now saying we cannot discriminate children based on their on sex, including sexual orientation and gender identity. Okay, do you see the problem there? Children do not have a sexual identity because children are not sexual. And again, I've talked about this all before, so I hate to beat a dead horse, but the reason why they go this way is because of pedophiles who have told us that children are sexual from birth. Okay, so get this in your mind. For them to ask children what their pronouns are on when they fill out paperwork, they are asking their children their sexual identities, which that should not be the case because children are not sexual. Children are not sexual. Anyway, I'm sorry, that's my little soapbox. It isn't just wrong, it's prohibited in American schools. So now, if I don't want to recognize a child through the Department of Education, now this, you know, this is what I'm understanding. This is not law, it is a part of the Department of Education, which is part of the added different departments. It's not like law on the books, but it might as well be, because everyone's going to follow it to a law, and you could probably lose your job over it. And you probably could, I don't even know what the ramifications are, but look at where we're at. We're at a place where the Department of Education requires us to be okay with or not discriminate a child's sexual identity. Do you remember the day where children were not allowed to be exposed to adult content? You remember that day? How many years ago was it? Oh, wait, it wasn't even that long ago. I mean, what a crazy and sped up world. Like, the destruction has just gone on hyperdrive, it feels like. There are only two. Okay, so so he says, what does internal sense of one's sex or gender have anything to do with the reality of one's sex? There are only two sexes, male and female, and a person's sex is observed at birth, not at design. So sexual discrimination has been reinterpreted to include a discrimination against feelings. So a student's feelings about what they are on the inside can no longer be questioned in American schools. We have to ensure that all students are safe and supported. And we're going to get into why schools are not safe for these kids and how they identify that. Okay, so it says that schools should think about adopting model plans to guide students and staff on how to support students in any transition process. The Comprehensive Sexual Education, CSE, which I hope you've heard of. If you haven't heard of it, we've got a lot of catch up on up to do. CSE was originally developed in the early 2000s at the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO. Wow, what does UNESCO need to deal with our children's sexuality in education? If you followed along with anything else, we've talked about the SECA Circle, the Sexual Information and Education Council of the United States, where they blatantly expose that they definitely want to teach children about sex by at least the fourth grade to undermine the elders of the community. So now we are having this program being pushed all over the nation. It started in California, I believe, and has gone all the way across the nation. And I don't know how active it is here because, again, it's something that is hidden, if it is, for the most part, until it's to the point where it, I don't know if you can stop it. Anyway, they pushed all member states from there to as a part of inclusive and global citizen on education. And I did learn that, you know, global citizenship is not the way the world succeeds. We are not global citizens. We are Americans. And as long as we're unwilling to bend to that knee or to bow to that knee, which we have elected officials who are willing to make us part of the, you know, the world, the global citizenship. They don't, they want to destroy all boundaries and they want to get rid of nations. And this is a part of the way they do that by connecting people through their sexual identity. Okay. Sorry. I'll try to keep on the straight narrow path because there's a lot of stuff I could go off on. Comprehensive sexuality education includes as core curriculum topics on sex, gender, and sexuality, all deeply informed by queer theory. Here we go. Sexual citizenship. Okay. Organizations like SEEK, as I just told you, and Planned Parenthood continue to its expansion down to the pre-K level. The American Medical Association, the American Psychological Association, and the American Academy of Pediatrics, there's the title, endorses comprehensive sex education, sexuality education. The highest educational institution in the land, ostensibly following the guidance of some of the largest international activist and professional organizations in the world, pushes schools to accept the fact that each of their students has a gender identity. These affirmative practices don't have any limiting principles. And I can't even go into how bad Planned Parenthood and why they're profiting greatly off of this. According to the OCR, the Office of Civil Rights, schools that refuse to affirm a student's gender identity directly violate civil rights laws. And I've talked about the lesser magistrate. This is a time for the lesser magistrates, which is you and I. If our elected officials won't do it, then we are the lesser magistrates and we have to require them to stop this madness. I don't remember. Now, this is the OCR, the Office of Civil Rights, that's within this Department of Education. But here it says here, I don't remember the Civil Rights Act of 1964, including gender identity, because it didn't. An employer who fires an individual merely for being gay or transgender violates Title VII. And Title VII gives funding. And schools don't want to lose their funding. So guess what? Money becomes the way of the world. So we do things that we don't agree with just so we can keep getting money, which I think is a horrible practice. Discrimination based on sex, sexual orientation, and transgender status. You cannot prohibit employment discrimination based on those things. Interprets Title VII to include gender identity, which is not an essential characteristic of one person as a protected category, especially those who think they can change it every day. I mean, that's just setting you up for disaster. Today you're one thing, tomorrow you're another thing, and if you misgender them or whatever, or discriminate against them, then you could be sued out the wazoo. How is that setting us up for not chaos? Okay, all public and private elementary and secondary schools, district, colleges, and universities receiving any federal finance system must comply with Title IX. Okay, so in order to get money, you have to comply with these stupid, stupid, ridiculous, unfounded, unbased laws that, or not even laws, rules that they're setting up. Okay, you'll notice gender identity is not mentioned. The U.S. Department of Education, OCR, doesn't care, and now it has significant ruling to hide behind it. So the court said you have to pay attention to it, or you can lose funding, and they just interpreted something that wasn't there. And we have to stand up against it and say it's not okay. If both males and females can enter a sex-segregated female-only space, then the space is no longer sex-segregated, which is a functional contradiction. You can't have it both ways. They want it. All right. Eliminating distinction means that an individual can identify as whatever sex they would like, using the constitutionally protected political position as grounds for trampling a constitutionally protected class of another party. All right, administrators and educators must develop new curriculum, policies, practices, and procedures to affirm and celebrate their students' gender identities. Queer theory, an activist discipline in the strictest possible sense, the activists are disciplined and discipline is activism, has completely captured school districts nationwide. Why is the OCR acting more like an activist organization pushing schools to adopt interpretations of laws that are functionally contradictory? Queer theory views contradictions as queer. Oh, so if you contradict yourself, then you're queer. If you don't make sense, you're queer. Do you see where this could possibly go off the rails. So embracing contradictions gives them power. Gendered language has to be eliminated to create a context in which cult doctrine can override physical reality and political and social environment is being established in the work in which the magic works. Queer theory is the foundation on which the U.S. Department of Education supporting transgender youth in schools document rests. In fact, queer theory is the foundation of most, if not all, school policies related to sex, gender, and sexuality in America today. Queer theory is found in all, all diversity, equity, and inclusion statements, commitments, frameworks. Everywhere you find DEI, you find queer theory. So does your university have a diversity, equity, inclusion department? Do they support or have they changed it to multiculturalism like most have done to circumvent the DEI rule? Did Austin just hire a city mayor, a city manager that supports DEI? Now you know where queer theory is coming from. Where they hide it in is diversity, equity, inclusion. Don't be stupid. Don't be fooled. It's in there. No longer is it just about skin. It's about your sexual identity. That's because the theory DEI is rooted in intersectional and includes critical, read woke, analysis of race, sex, gender, sexuality, and all the rest woven together. So it isn't permissible to consider some of them without considering all of them. So, okay. Sometimes DEI statements will mention queer theory explicitly. Other times you'll find it lurking in citations, but it's there. Okay. You don't find queer theory named explicitly in Lifting Every Voice. However, you do find the word safe mentioned 16 times, inclusive mentioned 39 times, and inclusion mentioned a walloping 49 times. So here we have a book that is inclusive, that includes everybody. Guess what? That's DEI. That's queer theory. Inclusive has been taken over, I can't think of that word. It's going to drive me crazy. Inclusive and inclusion is no longer what we think it means. It doesn't mean to include everyone. It means to include people who agree. Seeing the word safe, inclusive, inclusion mentioned every line is a cause for confusion. Assuming a person's gender is an exclusionary act. So if you assume that's a girl or a boy or that's a man or a woman, then you're being exclusionary. Queer theory is the theory of how society works. It's not just about sex. It's how society works. Okay, sex is the gateway. How it works is the whole ultimate goal. Specifically, it's a theory of how society determines what our standards, rules, and norms are, especially as those standards and rules and norms relate to sex, gender, and sexuality. Queer theory assumes that all norms are regulated and connected to social power. It seeks to explode rigid normalizing categories. It's not just a way to think about the world, it's something you do to change it. So to leave the world as it is impossible for anyone who is a queer activist. Queer theory is both a theory and practice, often describes as praxis. That's just the way you live it out. So you don't have to teach people. Your praxis is how you execute it. They take their theory into the world and agitate for social change through political activism. The goal is to change society. They expose problems in the status quo. They organize community or school groups for political action, right? So what happens when we as Christians organize for political action? They're like, oh no, that's not appropriate for you. You don't get to be political because political is a dirty word. But all these queer activists, all these queer indoctrinated into the cult people, they're going to live their lives indoctrinating and creating change while we Christians sit in the church and just, you know, sing our hymns and pray our prayers and hope God shows up. I mean, we've purposely stepped out of the conversation and they're gladly going to shame you if you try to get back into the conversation. Trust me, I know they've been there, got the t-shirt. Literally. And so if we're not engaging and being an influence in the culture as believers, guess what? They certainly are. And they're happy to take over and undo all of the society as we know it. And I'm not speaking hyperbolic. This is what they're doing. It's not what they want. It's what they're doing. And we have been somewhat complicit in helping them do it. The designation of normal is therefore not grounded in facts about the realities of being human, including our patterns of social interaction, nor is it merely arbitrary. It is explicitly self-serving and political, thus unjust, in need of disruption and dismantling. All norms, everything normal carries a political agenda. So we can't support the norm because we're being political as Christians, but what we carry is a political agenda that they're going to undo. Make sense of that. Oh, wait, that's the contradiction that they love and thrive on. Queer activists believe the only reason people believe anything is normal or natural is because those people have been brainwashed to believe so through a half-organic process called socialization. So everything we've experienced up until this point has been people being brainwashed, and now they're the righteous saviors who are going to come and make it all right by changing society. In this view, powerful people and institutions use the cover of science, objectivity, reason, and rationality to mask an unfair social hierarchy that grants privilege to those people who people considered normal, while marginalizing those considered abnormal. So we're the bad guys. We who hold value to tradition and norms of society, we're the bad guys. So you're a bad guy if you value family. You're a bad guy if you value truth, honesty, integrity, merit, all those things, you're a bad guy. Activists think they must practice their political activism until society no longer considers anything normal. Okay, so this was first incubated in women's studies and lesbian and gay studies throughout the 1980s. So this is where queer education started. They demanded a say in these disciplines, queer activists did, that no one understood how oppressive these fields were, and they had to expose it. Queer activists claim the truth of how society works and use academic activism to make queer theory interdisciplinary. In short, queer activists queered the university system by changing how everyone in that system thought about traditions, standards, rules, and knowledge, norms, and knowledge itself. Queer pedagogy is a radical form of educative praxis implemented deliberately to interfere with, intervene in, the production of normalcy in schooled subjects. So you don't have to have a subject on queer theory. You just have to prove how normalcy has become oppressive to everyone. Queer activists work to queer schools, deliberately interfere with production of normal kids. Children who learn to be normal, so the argument goes, serve to reproduce the norms of society. Queer theory's central goal is to eliminate norms, and queer activists knew then, as they do now, they must first break the normal child if they want to break normal society. Remember what they do? They traumatize the child and say, oh, here, come, I have to offer you help and healing and salvation for you. It's so gross what they're doing to our children. Queer activists have been queering schools for the last 30 years. Queer elementary education, a queer curriculum for fourth grade they've been queering our schools for the last 30 years. So today's administrators, curriculum developers, and teachers look to papers like Queering Elementary Education, a queer curriculum for fourth grade, to inform them how to make their schools and classrooms more inclusive. So if you are a teacher who works on inclusivity, you are promoting the queer theory agenda. You're promoting it. You're a part of it. Inclusivity is their goal, not inclusivity of everyone, inclusivity of the right people. And if you don't agree with them, you're not the right people. When children are educated to believe these terms are commonly used and understand, they will locate meaning in them and define themselves and the world on these terms. Okay, so they start indoctrinating them on the terminology of cult queer theory, right? There's a lot more I can go on. I'm going to stop before I make you want to walk away from me, because I want you to understand the severity of what situation we're in right now. So ubiquitous is queer theory that is now synonymous with inclusive policies, procedures, and learning. Children are learning that the thing called gender identity exists. Okay? In schools nationwide, in both red and blue states, educators tell children that an ideology called cis-heteronormativity permeates all aspects of society. Okay? That just means normal heterosexual couples. Normal that has existed for all of time is now part of the oppressive culture. Queer theory isn't presented to children as a gigantic academic cult discipline. It is. It's easy, colorful, and fun in consumption, taking shape through cute-looking cartoons like the gingerbread person or the gender unicorn. Are you connecting any dots yet? Have you seen why we understand what they're talking about? Things like we grew up with knowing they were innocent and not having any other meanings have changed. Like, we can't trust anything we know anymore because it may have been usurped by this group, and they may have taken over the words, the vocabulary. And we're going to talk about who does that. What group does that? They take over language. Okay, these are cult doctrines. All right, they've repurposed education to queer the healthy minds and the bodies of normal kids, because all kids are queer. They're no longer trying to figure out if your kid is queer. They assume and believe that all kids are queer. They're not only concerned with queer educators are only concerned with radicalizing children, all children. All right. So I think I skipped. Oh, hold on. There we go. Okay, I did it. All right. The best way, so queer activists determined the best way to do this is to teach kids to queer themselves, to teach kids to destabilize their minds and bodies by deconstructing their identity until they become queer, which is a political cult identity that has nothing to do with sex, gender, or sexuality. So when they say you're attacking a alphabet part of the community because you don't like the queer theory being shoved down our throats, that's a distraction because it's not about sex or gender. It's about becoming, what did they say? It's the political cult identity that has nothing to do. You have to become queer. It has nothing to do with the political cult identity, sex, gender, or sexuality. Queer is by definition, listen to this, whatever is at odds with the normal, the legitimate, and the dominant. There is nothing in particular to which it necessarily refers, and it is identity without an essence. No such thing as healthy and innocent child. They do not believe that children are healthy and innocent. A queer education first reduces vulnerable children to empty vessels, then fills them with revolutionary political programming. If queer activists reduce children to empty categories, then there's no longer anything society can point to and say we must protect that. The goal of queer education is to radically deconstruct a child into a fluid, permanent, shifting, and unintelligible object of revolution. They do everything they can to destroy the relationship parents have with their children. They're destroying the family and saying, we'll be your family now. Have you heard any influencers do that? If your mom doesn't love you, I'll love you. All right, chapter 2, what is queer theory? All right, so this was unheard of back in the 90s. Back when, I don't know, it was unheard of. Okay, so a lot has changed. Queer activists informed by queer theory teach children that everyone has an inherent and fixed gender identity that society cannot question. Society is designed to oppress them, and they tell kids they can escape this unbearable situation by manufacturing a new queer identity for themselves. The categories of man and woman are socially politically constructed. Social traditions and culture norms determine what a woman is, not biology. Women do not exist out of political constructions. The queer theory is that women do not exist out of political constructions. Do you hear that? All agree in recognizing the fact that females exist in human species today. As always, they make up about one half of humanity. And yet we're told that femininity is in danger. Okay? We're told it's in danger, but it's just a political construction. Beauvoir turned women into an empty category left to interpretation. And we know it talks about Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson admitting she couldn't define what a woman was when she was being confirmed. Woman can't be defined for a female. It can only be defined by a female. Who is a female? It depends on who decides. Okay, so Michel Foucault, a French communist who escaped allegations of pedophilia only in death, so he was accused of pedophilia, but he died before they could get to him, is widely considered the progenitor of queer theory. Foucault believed there's no objective truth that humans have access to. So does he believe that God exists? I would say no. He is a godless man who was also an accused pedophile. With yet another pedophile, we got all the pedophiles telling everybody how to parent their children. We've got them in schools. We got everybody. When are we going to step up to stop this madness? With the weight and air of legitimacy comes the power to decide what truth should be considered more valid and trustworthy. His worldview was the scientific disciplines are one of the society's primary methods of controlling what truth is. Gender Trouble is one of the most widely read works in queer theory. He grabs hold of Foucault's idea and says, the soul, or she does, actually, the Judith Butler, the soul is the prison of the body. Wow. So people who don't believe in God don't recognize that God created both body and soul. And so they're trying to escape the prison of their body. Okay, so people don't have a gender, they become a gender. The shock of drag performances mocks the idea of a stable gender categories because men can transcend boundaries and become women. All right, so when sex is decoupled from personality and behavior, gender, then sex, as Butler suggests, loses all meaning. And that's exactly what they've done. To mock the meaning out of sex, gender, the goal of this approach is to mock the meaning out of sex, gender, and sexuality entirely to undetermine people's belief in them as meaningful and stable categories relevant to being. Okay, so performing your gender differently is an act of freeing your soul. The soul, okay, again, it says the soul. I meant to skip that one. The goal of queer theory is to break the brainwashing program so you can free yourself from yourself. Queer theory's activity is to deconstruct the very concept of normalcy. Only whatever and whoever, they get to define what it is. Queer activists gets to define what a woman is. Okay? The goal of queer theory is to use political activism to make people conscious of the prison. And developing a queer consciousness, one becomes a radical activist who's used queer theory as the lens through which they view all society to free their soul. To tell all people how... Okay. The pillar of legitimacy, they use the hierarchy of power, privilege, they use this to tell all people how they can live and act. These ideologies blind everyone to the actual workings of power in society, convincing everyone, normal and abnormal, the way society is structural. I can't finish that quote, but they hide the power dynamics from, the dominant class is hiding the power dynamics to blind everyone, and the queer activists must free us from the prison of our soul. The goal of queer theory is to awaken people to the truth. A person with a queer conscience is queer. Okay. So remember, we're talking about queer as an idea, not queer as an, I mean, it's not just about sexual identity. They are breaking chains to free their minds so they can become whoever they think, whoever they feel they are. They are breaking the very things that make civilization possible. Queer activists are narcissists who want the world to bend to their will, and they think think that anything that tells them no must be destroyed. Okay, queer theory. It's moving up, moving faster. That first one was pretty heavy because it was so full of stuff that I think was really important. Okay, so Simone de Beauvoir, Michael Foucault, and Judith Butler didn't develop their theories of sex, gender, and sexuality from scratch. Okay, here we go. Now I've gotten you, your cognitive dissonance is really hyped up. We're going to talk about this in a way that is going to be offensive because most of it would say, no, we don't use the M word. Queer theory is queer Marxism. Okay, Marxism is predicated on the idea that man is creative and social in nature. We take our consciousness and make it an object. The thoughts in our head become material. We materialize them. Okay, so this is based on Marxist theory of Marxism. But it didn't work the way he wanted it to work, and so they had to change it and pivot. Through working on nature, I've materialized my consciousness, and by reflecting on my creation, I come to know myself as a creator. And again, who does that replace? God is the creator of man. Now, Marx says, actually, I get to know myself, then I become the creator of myself. I'm humanizing the world, and each time I do it, I fully realize who I am. For Marx, we inherit the world that previous generations have worked on. So we actually get to benefit from what everybody else did before us because we are our own creator. That is, humans create a society and then society conditions future humans in the image of those who originally made it. So we have to destroy it. We collectively work on nature and create a society that reflects the history of our progress back to us. Our collectivized consciousness will become one with itself. History will end because we have realized, so when we succeed, we are man creator. History will end because we have realized our full human nature as creative and collective beings. We will collectively become God, and in so doing, we will remember that we were already God and have been all along. Oh, what a beautiful place to be, that we are God. We've been it all along. We just have been ignorant of it until we're not. Can you see how this could go wrong? And this is what, when you talk about inclusion, this is what you're tilling the soil to be for kids and other people to be influenced by this toxic ideology. The theology of Marxism, which defines a transformative collective Gnostic cult. Now remember, Gnostic is just a fancy word for, I know something that you don't know. And until you can know it, you can't be a part of the cool club. Okay, so the fall of man. Capitalism makes man forget who he really is, a perfect socialist. That's why they hate capitalism, because it makes a man forget about socialism, which is not a bad thing, because socialism is a deadly political system that destroys everything it touches. Remember, Marxist theology argues that we are only human if we are creative and social. If someone forces me to make the thoughts in their head, their products, their service, a reality for them, then that person is denying my humanity. He is denying I mean, literally, I just heard this on a local university campus. Students are saying, you're not allowing me to exist. You're denying my humanity because you're saying what I believe is wrong. In the theology of Marxism, man ate from the tree of knowledge of good and evil in nature and learned that he could own private property, and upon that ownership divided his labor, which alienates him from himself as a creative and social species. So he must establish a communist society by abolishing private property. One of the tenets of what makes our country succeed is private property. So it's no shocker that they want to get rid of that component. Communism is the riddle of history solved, and it knows itself to be the solution. Marxism is therefore, as a religion, the aim to seize control of demiurgic power to become not God, but the socialist demiurge who, upon completing his task of undoing the fall of man, would liberate humanity through an act of self-sacrifice, thus actualizing himself fully as a socialist God. So remember, they said, oh wait, Christians, stop being exclusive. We want you to be inclusive and you're not inclusive. So don't come and be political, even though we say everything you do is politically motivated. Don't be political, but we're going to replace what you believe with this religion called Marxism. Now it's called queer Marxism. Okay, because their goal is to become God. The state, okay, the divine savior sacrifices itself and withers away. Voila, communism. That is the real communism that has never been tried. So I've heard this said before. We just haven't successfully tried it. I would say based on the ways we've tried it, it has proven itself to be unsuccessful, and there is no successful way to try it. And that keeps us from ever dismissing it because we're like, it just hasn't been tried correctly. Yeah, it has. And it's failed miserably. Socialism, communism, it's all failed. Millions of dead bodies bear witness to the fact that Marxism doesn't work. Marxism is a cult theology, so acting as if it has anything to do with economics produces devastating consequences. So it's not an economic theory. It is a cult. It's cult theology, and it doesn't help economies. It just destroys them. Marxists needed new tools to push us all toward the end of history. He suggested, Marcuse, following the suggest of Mao's Chinese Revolution, suggested identity politics would be the place to turn. They use Marxist theology as a launch pad for their social critiques, and in so doing created the new flavor of Marxism that we're all dealing with today, queer Marxism. Capitalism brainwashes people to believe that organizing society based on who has private property and who doesn't is normal common sense, and fair. Capitalism coerces everyone to believe that this is just how the world works. It is incumbent upon the oppressed class to become conscious of the truth of Marxism, to develop a class consciousness and adapt socialism, and to become revolutionaries charged with taking control of society and abolishing, transcending private property as a form of human estrangement. Normal people couch their justification for why they are considered normal and others are not in an ideology called normativity, broadly, and cis-heteronormativity specifically. Okay, queer theory, it is incumbent upon the oppressed class, the abnormal people, to become conscious of truth of queer theory, to develop a queer conscience, and to become revolutionaries charged with taking control of society and abolishing transcending normalcy as a form of human self-estrangement. In abolishing normalcy, man returns to his creative and social nature, which is intrinsically queer. So we're just returning to who we really are. Is what they think. Okay, so queer Marxism, revolutionary theory of history, aims to radicalize people, encourage them to take control of society, and force everything and everyone to become queer. Their goal is to make everyone queer. Are you okay with that? Where in the Bible does it talk about us being queer? It doesn't, because it's not. It flies in the face of everything God has taught us about who he is, what he's created for us, and everything that is associated with that. Queer is by definition whatever is at odds with the normal. So remember, it's identity without essence. Queer theory argues that sex and gender are social constructs. Gender exists and is entirely constructed of political power. So the oppressors in society take their science and tell everyone it's objective so they can mold you into a normal person so they can control you. How you identify, control what your sex, gender, and sexuality are. We don't have gender, we perform our gender. Developing a queer consciousness is the process of casting off the chains to free ourselves completely. In queer theory, trans people are considered sacred because they have developed a queer consciousness, because they are considered divine. It is human society, not biology, that determines the categorical difference between large... I'm not going to read that part. Sorry. That was a good part, but I'm not reading out loud. I don't want to have to put a warning on this. In queer Marxist theology, trans or non-binary people are breaking society's change. They are refusing the doctor's assignment as society demands. Queer activists believe that if they can repeat the cycle, man makes society, society makes man enough, they will reach the end of history, realizing their full queer humanity and become God. I wish you would have used a little G because that's more appropriate. Queer communism cannot be accomplished without force. All right, the last chapter we're going to cover, and I'm really going over time, so I apologize, but we're so close. Okay, the critical turn in education. Critical Marxists captured the American university system a decade ago, paving the way for queer activists to queer education. The Marxist cult has long known that education is a crucial lever for jumpstarting, maintaining communist revolution. They've put a stranglehold. Both men knew that a stranglehold on schools was a precondition for operational success. Marx was wrong because he thought if they could get all the working class to mobilize against the elites and the bourgeois, but he was wrong. A crisis emerged in Marxist theory when socialist movements failed to take root in Western industrial societies that they had in the largely agrarian Russia and China. Neo-Marxists now arrived on the page. That just means new Marxists, cultural, Western, and critical Marxists, that culture plays a vital role in suppressing the revolutionary energy required to spark a communist revolution. So Gramsci said culture was therefore made into a particularly important domain of critique, since it was there that power and dominion could be woven into the consciousness of everyday life of subjects. Okay, so the neo-Marxists could no longer count on the working class and the Western societies to wake up and make their own and answer the communist revolutionary call. Neo-Marxists created critical theory to first weaken and then radically transform Western culture. A critical theory seeks to critique and change society. Okay, so they could criticize those aspects of existing society they wish to change. All right, critical theory must imagine an ideal moral society liberated from the oppressive structures of an existing society. Second, critical theory must ruthlessly critique how society one lives in falls short of this ideal moral vision. Third, a critical theory must require political activism to change society one lives in until it matches the ideal moral version of society. The ideal moral society envisioned by critical theory is sold as one where all people are free from domination and oppression. That is, it's a negative imagery, one defined in terms of not being anything of the things critical Marxists don't like. It offers only a negative vision. It's not a theory, but really a playbook. Okay, they captured the institutions to develop a revolutionary counterculture within them. Neo-Marxists captured, endlessly critiqued the media, education, the church, and the family, and the law for all the ways these institutions were falling short of the Marxist vision. Marxists are well known for redefining words and not telling you about it. Okay, like this is what I was telling you about. When Marxists don't tell you their target audiences, that they believe that a just society necessarily limits individual freedoms. Or as Marx Horkheimer stated in an interview in 1969, freedom and justice are dialectical concepts. The more freedom, the less justice, and the more justice, the less freedom. Americans are too free. Western citizens are not interested. They were not interested in Marxism. The working class was happy to go to work, aspired to join a middle class, and happy to watch TV, buy decent cars, and go on an occasional holiday with their children. All right. So, this opposition is directed, let's see here, very different. Oh, I'm trying to read this. I'm going to move on to this part. Okay. They present a false morality, and the radical politics involve activating and active minorities. So they targeted a group of people that they thought they could convince them they were oppressed by society. Marcuse argued for radicalizing specific subgroups of people that would be more welcoming to the Marxist sales pitch. The goal was to convince ghetto populations, the unemployed, sexual minorities, feminists, and anyone else who had grievances to become so enamored with socialism that it would literally become a biological need in their lives. Okay, so to the question, where did all the 60s radicals go? To the classroom. Marxist activists applied critical theory to the study of law, creating critical legal studies, which has, I think, destroyed our legal system. They argue that white people created a white supremacist society, gave themselves a special form of bourgeois private property called whiteness, and used hidden privileges afforded to them by whiteness to maintain a racial hierarchy to their economic, political, and culture beliefs. Does whiteness have a different flavor for you now, seeing where it came from? Whiteness is not about being white. It's just the way they were able to deliver their toxic ideology was through the color of someone's skin. Fieri argued that education must always be central to the theory and practice of building movements for radical social change, because regardless of context, it is through education that consciousness about one's person within the social order is obtained. So Fieri is not just somebody they quote. He is the citation for all of U.S. education. You can't earn your teaching degree without being touched by Paulo Freire's critical theory. Okay? You find his influence in every nook and cranny of U.S. education, from how teachers are trained to design and implement curriculum to how school now disciplines students, restorative justice. Oh, I just read another book about restorative justice and how destructive it actually is. Okay, Freire is the guy who makes the act of teaching queer theory to children possible. Fieri claimed that the true purpose of education was to help learners cast off their magical consciousness and put them to the develop critical consciousness. Critical consciousness is the belief that one must read socio-political conditions critically and take action. Everything in society is designed to oppress them. Okay, so they have awakened to the prophetic vision of the postmodern neo-Marxist faith. People of critical consciousness are religious fanatics hell-bent on breaking society and steering us toward the end of the history. But please don't use religious symbols in the White House on your Easter eggs or for art projects, because we only believe one religion is allowed, and that is Marxism, queer Marxism to be specific. Fieri then critiqued traditional education methods for all the ways that don't lead to development of critical consciousness in learners. That is, an academic material becomes an excuse to talk about radicalizing political issues on critical Marxist term. Okay, so the educational methods only deserve to ignore this true knowledge while forcing learners to accept the truth as society wants them to see it. In the critical classroom, no true knowledge exists outside the true knowledge of Marxist and analysis and oppression of the truth of Marxism. It's all about privileging the lived experiences of students who know the truth of their concrete realities. I remember one time someone said, now you need to listen to my lived experiences, because they were indicating that my experiences were invalid because their lived experiences trumped my lived experiences. And I was just like, that's just a fancy word for saying you think your voice has been elevated because of your perceived oppression. It's been going on for a long time. Okay, Fieri sees this position in explicitly religious terms, calling it the process of death and rebirth, even comparing it to a personal Easter. Okay, this was so disgusting to me. To compare Easter. I mean, I know it just literally fell on Transgender Day of Visibility, but so many people, this was like red flag. Hello, hello, I'm a Marxist. When they said that transgenderism, their transformation, is their own personal Easter, that's Marxism. That's queer Marxism, because there is one only resurrection, and that is the resurrection of Jesus. It has changed all of history. It is forever marked how we experience life here on earth. So Fieri sees this process in explicitly religious terms. Yeah, I already read that part. Sorry. He describes this personal Easter in stark cultic terms, explicitly designed to displace Christianity. Oh, we don't have to wonder what they're thinking. They're saying it out loud. And the same thing is happening with this university issue that I've been talking about. The people are saying that the university is oppressing people, have likened Easter to their own transformation because they're no longer Christians in the sense that has always been Christianity. They're now a new version of it, which has been queered. All education schools in the United States push Fieri's Marxist theory of education and pedagogical practices in their programs. Fieri's theory dominates our education schools, and critical educators believe that the only way to reduce inequality and achieve social justice is to push kids to develop critical consciousness and become political activists. Critical pedagogy in a disciplinary to incorporate these elements needed to address specific domains of oppression. All right, so Gloria Ladson Billings developed culturally relevant teaching that critical pedagogy went mainstream in children's classrooms. So Are you a teacher? Do you teach culturally? Do you use culturally relevant teaching? Teachers could only be successful in liberating their students if they were equipped with unique theories and tools to address not only class, but race, ethnicity, sexuality, and culture in their classrooms. Culturally relevant teaching is addressed to address multiple domains of oppression, not just economic class. Culturally relevant teaching, in other words, is intersectional. Intersectional is how many places of oppression cross in your world. Culturally relevant teaching is now considered an essential practice for eliminating achievement gaps between student groups, reducing classroom conflict, and maximizing every student's equal shot at the same outcome, as it is so often phrased. Culturally relevant teaching forwards this idea that many children fail in school because there's a cultural mismatch between their schools and their home community. Okay, so this culturally relevant teacher assumes that academic knowledge and skills must be situated within students' lived experience and in frames of references to be learned. How's that working out for us? Are kids thriving in schools? Mm-mm. They're failing worse than ever. So how about we stop this madness and get back to what we know works, what has worked in the past? They think that success in school has always been reflected how well a student assimilates in the dominant culture. All right? Culturally relevant teaching rests on the idea that schools stabilize the oppressive social and economic order by only accepting normal ways of reading, writing, and thinking and behaving. All right. Their mission is to empower and inspire students to change their dominant culture through social justice activism. That's why you get things like merit-based is white. Being on time is white. Doing a good job is white. Let's change those horrible characteristics and undermine them and destroy them so we can put something else in its place. What it is, we don't know. What they offer, there is nothing they offer. Culturally relevant teaching was easy to sell a ravenous mob that was under incredible pressure to leave no child behind. Culturally relevant teachers needed somewhere to turn to figure out how to handle the culture of sex, gender, and sexuality in the American classroom. Queer theory. Ready and willing to answer the call as the bodies of women's studies and gay and lesbian studies lay unconscious on the floor. Fourier's ideas had already queered U.S. education prior to queer theory's ascent in the academy. Queer theory is entirely concerned with analyzing and abolishing norms. Each advance was accompanied by the moral weight of an argument to increase LGBT empathy, visibility, and representation. Activists had no idea they were, in fact, queer activists. And I think that's the case for Abilene. I don't think many people recognize what they're actually a part of. They've just been told the right buzzwords to say, and they are repeating it all the time. And it has made them actually a part of the problem. And that's why it feels so offensive when we say, hey, listen, this isn't okay. Look what they're doing to our kids. And they're like, I would never do that to the kids. But they actually are. And they just don't recognize it. And I don't blame them for not recognizing it. But every time I've tried to talk to them about it, they just dismiss me and act like I'm a crazy woman trying to bring up nothing, make something out of nothing, which I'm not one to do that. I don't like personally being isolated and rejected by people because I make up weird stories. I actually just care about people and want to make sure they know the truth because the truth sets them free. And this queer theory is definitely, it doesn't set you free of the prison of your body. It imprisons you to never, ever find satisfaction, joy, or actual true life. Okay, so over the past, most of the educators who have irrevocably harmed education and therefore children over the past few decades aren't aware of their theory of education and teaching where the practices were derived from. It's imperative we ask teachers how teachers can affirm the voices of marginalized students, engage them in critically, emphasis added, while at the same time assist them in transforming their communities into sites of struggle and resistance. Our children all now attend culturally relevant, diverse, equitable, sustainable, and inclusive schools, which mean they're all attending schools that push them to develop critical consciousness. Queer Marxism is practiced in nearly every school in America today because Marxists captured U.S. education decades ago. The true purpose of education is education for social justice. So do you understand why our schools are irreparable? Funding is not going to fix this. We actually have to fix what's going on, and it starts with unqueering our schools. Queer theory is the most destructive by far. Okay, queer theory active achieves this goal and much more by pushing children into the queer cult and convincing them that they must not only transform society, but they must also do it by transforming themselves. Parents must understand how queer theory is practiced in schools if they wish to protect their children from the Marxist groomers who attempt to recruit them for revolution by poisoning their minds and bodies. And now that we've gone over almost double today, I'm going to stop there and just say thank you so much for watching. please join in for part two. It's just as equally riveting as what we're going to talk about. And make sure you share and subscribe and share this with your family and friends so that we can get the word out, so that we can understand how you can then see this stuff once you've learned it and once you see it all over, not because we're looking for, you know, that which isn't there, but we're seeing what we didn't recognize because now we have the ability to put the pieces together to make sense. And we've got to do our part to stand up and fight this before it destroys all things that matter to us here in our society, which is the things that makes our societies work. So until next time.